Blog Talk Radio.
Love is the astrolabe of God's mysteries. A lover may be drawn to this love or that love, but in the end, love leads us beyond. However we seek to explain love, when we fall in love, our words fall short. Explanation by the tongue makes most things clear, but love unexplained is clearer. Bring to your hand the practice of love. Keep concealed its mysteries. For only love itself can explain love. The proof of the sun is in the sun itself. Prepare not a snare of deceit like others, whose exterior is adorned with holy love and spirituality. While ever in secret, brothers devour the flesh of brothers. Strive for their injury, and exult in revealing their defects. Be a rider of true love, and fear not the way, for love's steed is swift of pace, and in a single bound it brings us home, though the road be rocky and uneven.
Welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I'm your host, Richard Weissman, and this is Late Night Poets, the largest poetry group on allpoetry.com, which they tell me is the largest poetry site on the internet. And after all these years, I still tend to believe them. Welcome to the show. Let me start out by saying that my co-host, Neutron Bomb, is on hiatus. She is doing some other stuff, but she will be back one of these days. In the meantime, I have a substitute co-host, and I am bringing her on right now.
Hello.
Hey, Babbler. Good. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, not a problem.
I'm awesome. Very conveniently available.
That's great. Yeah. So we appreciate it. And we've got someone else on hold. Let me bring him on. Hey, Laurent.
Well, good evening to you, Richard. Hello, Babbler.
Hello.
Good to have you on the show. So, here was my idea. We, you know, April, National Poetry Month. So the first show we had in April, we did inspired by Shakespeare. And great stuff, obviously. And I didn't know where else we could go from Shakespeare. So I just, you know, did a left turn and said, let's go for the most spiritual poet out there. That's why tonight is Rumi. We do have someone else on hold. Let me bring them on. 323, you are on the air.
Hi, everyone. It's Truth Teals.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I didn't catch the name, though.
Truth Teals?
Okay.
Truth.
Well, Truth?
It's been a while since I've been on.
Okay.
Yeah, Truth.
Awesome. Welcome. So
thank
glad
you.
You're here. Yeah, thanks for joining us on the air. So, started out with a love poem of Rumi. That's how we opened the show. What'd you guys think? What'd you think, Babbler?
I thought it was really lovely, and it was beautiful and spiritual, and yet interestingly dark. You know, it talks about people hurting other people and revealing their own flaws, and about how that's not love. You know, and the need to accept that. It's unexpectedly dark for a love poem, mm-hmm. and yet it is inarguably a love poem. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And Rumi's kind of famous for doing unusual stuff, and that whole spiritual teaching wisdom, you know, almost mystical wisdom stuff. And Laurent, what did you think of The Open?
I thought it was well done, kind of haunting, easy to listen to, because he's a great reader, or whoever was it Rumi who did the actual reading?
No, I don't think so, no, but...
Well, whoever did it reminded me of something I've heard in the past, and I'm searching my mind, trying to think of it, and I can't bring it forward, but it does remind me of something. It's certainly a beautiful reading of a beautiful poem.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I thought the same thing, kind of haunting and disturbing, and yet so much truth and wisdom in there, and that really is Rumi. Okay, so I know we have a big board, and Babbler, if you're okay with it, what Neutron normally does is she posts the poems and tells us who's going to read them, and then I do the comments.
Not a problem. I can do that. Post poem.
Awesome.
All right. Let me grab the board for you then.
Thanks so much.
All right. You take a second.
That's all right. Take your time.
Once I get it all set up, it won't take as long a second time, right?
No worries.
All right. First piece is up.
Okay. And who would you like to read it?
I'll go ahead and start off with me. So,
great.
So this is A Fabulous Bewitching and How My Grandparents Taught Me About Death by Stephen N. Wine. Upon my grandparents' trips to Italy, a fabulous bewitching took place, for I had their whole second floor to myself, free to explore all their shelves. And in their bedroom, with a childish spunk, I had a free tour of the things they tucked away, a free tour of what sat hushed against their bedroom wall, a free tour of their lovely trunk. Draw bolts above the slats, aged old leather straps, lift the lock plate, sound of metal, lift the tray, free to roam, to pick with my hands, nothing planned, and now a quick glance, Wonderland, European crucifix, mixed linens, cigar aroma, Madonna litho, my eyes embraced every nook, a discover space, fatherland photographs, half dollars silvery, old passports, Army beret, youthful letters, images of my mother's capers, nothing overlooked, watches of quartz, a singer manual, and other sewing lovelies, even the tangled mess of black and white rosaries, that little devil in me, my piracy of a chest, me and my adventure spree. And there they were, prayer cards, bundled in rubber bands, like a pack of baseball cards, yet with religious iconography. And as I fanned them out, spread them apart as in the hope of discovering a possible all-star, I view the wispy human phantoms now, photographed and encased in plastic. Unfamiliar faces, some young, most of old age, a ghostly portal in a way, as if the curtains were pulled away about something I could not yet understand, yet knowing I was looking at photographs of the once living and how they once appeared. uncanny the adventures taken as a young one, the adventures of a grandson, and how it led to my grandparents blamelessly teaching me about death, recalling that then I studied their mass cards in my innocence, and now, as an adult, I have my own pack, just as my grandparents did. This time absent any youthful wish for all stars, as I fan them out here and there, remembering conversations I had with the now dead, my collection growing year after year. End of poem.
Great read, Dabbler. So, wow. I posted the prompt. So Rumi's work is just so vast, and we always encourage our poets to do things written by the author that we're featuring. And Stephen took us up on that. And the prompt was, this phantom world gives you false signs, but you turned from your illusion and journeyed to the land of truth. And I thought it was a great writing to that prompt. His gift for nostalgia, not just in this poem, but in general, as well as capturing emotions past and present while bridging earthly and spiritual realms, is palpable in this poem of ancestry and the familial trunk as time capsule. And he just does it so well. I thought it a great way to start off our evening featuring the spiritual poetry of Rumi. Great response to the prompt. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
Well, I think Stephen brought us along with him on a voyage into the past, and the warm aroma and flavor of his write is a sensorium that brings me back to similar circumstances. I think most of us may have had similar experiences, and it's so relatable in that manner. The prayer card, baseball contrast was delightful, and that was also very relatable. You know, I once opened an old chest or something similar, and it had been packed with mothballs and other things to keep insects and stuff away, and the smell of it was so... It's a unique odor of old things properly cared for and put away, emerging into the light of day. And I just thought he did that so well with this. Just like outstanding work.
Absolutely. Yeah, I too really like that contrast between the baseball card collection and the prayer, you know, the saints. Real nice. And Babbler, I'll give you final word as our reader.
I really enjoyed it. It was a really nice, like, antique, nostalgic piece. I didn't know any of my grandparents particularly well, but my mom is a hoarder. So I'm quite familiar with the boxes of random stuff from years ago phenomena, especially when it's just random items. Like, you never know what you're going to find in there, and you never know what of those items are really going to stick with you. You know, I have this plastic jade-colored hair clip that's probably from, like, the 70s that I found in one of my mom's old boxes when I was a kid. And I played with it over and over and over again, and now I still have it. Now it's in my bathroom in my little bin of hair stuff. And that just holds a lot of, like, value to me. You know, memories for me, nostalgia for me. And so I can really relate to this piece because I feel like that's what the prayer cards are like, you know. But even unlike mine, his is a growing collection, you know, because people continue to pass. So I really enjoyed it. I think it shared that same kind of feel as that first piece where it's like darkly romantic, but not like macabre, but like, you know, there's a sense of loss to it. So I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, excellent comment. And I think we're going to you're going to have more of those feelings as the evening goes on. I think it's just inherent in an exploration of Rumi's work. And with that, I guess we're ready for our next one.
Oh, I was on mute.
Okay,
so
no worries.
Piece is up, and do you want to give that one a read, Richard?
Sure. Okay, so this is by Matt 29. It's called Don't Be Rubbed Out. If you are irritated by every rub, how will your mirror be polished? Constantly changing for peers and society leaves only crumbs, the inner persona becoming meshed into a confessional mess, not knowing if they are wearing these clothes or that hairstyle. Being you is exemplary and a shining beacon to others. Allow yourself to shine rather than being rubbed out. Your essence is a light in the darkness of life. You are the flower in the meadow that people see standing tall and not allowing the wind to topple, designing yourself perfectly to recreate yourself. When you are feeling lost and without direction, remember what you can do instead of wanting change. Consult friends and colleagues to embellish and strengthen. You are enough and don't need to rub constantly for ideas. End of poem. And Babbler, if you could get us started off, what'd you think?
Absolutely. I like it kind of how this piece starts with its prompt, you know, what this is riffing off, you know, the idea of being irritated by every rub, how will your mirror be polished, you know, this idea that irritations are meant to make you improve. But this piece is more about, you know, don't harass yourself, you know, don't feel like you constantly have to be changing and improving. And sometimes where you are is good enough. Never mind the fact that with the way time works for us, or at least perceived for us, you don't really have much choice about changing. It's not something you necessarily have to do actively, you know. You know, constantly changing for peers and society, you know, like the reason for change should be more than that. It shouldn't be bending to other people's whims. It shouldn't be, you know, deprioritizing yourself to put other people first and become who they want you to be. You know, the idea of changing, you know, should be about what you want, like your own version of self-improvement, you know. Allow yourself to shine rather than being rubbed out, I think is a wonderful response to Rumi's original quote, you know. If you're constantly being rubbed out, how are you even supposed to shine? Will people even recognize that you're a mirror, you know? So I think this is a great response. I think it had some wonderful rebuttals and kind of matched up saying, yeah, you know, change is good. Improvement is good, but watch which direction you're changing. You know, change yourself for you. And sometimes it's okay to not change. You know, remember what you can do instead of wanting change. Consult friends and colleagues to embellish and strengthen. You know, you don't have to do it yourself, and you don't have to do it for other people. So I thought this was well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I, too, was really impressed by this poem. It was an interesting and appropriate response to the prompt. And I thought it was just really different response. Like I would take, so just so we're on the same page here, if you are irritated by every rub, how will your mirror be polished? Sounds to me like I need to polish my mirror in order to get the dust off and rediscover my true self. And if that's going, if I'm going to be irritated by every aspect of this cleansing, how am I going to do it? I have to be okay with the process, even though it might be uncomfortable and unnatural. And that's why I thought Matt's response was so interesting, because he took it in quite a different direction, that the rub, the irritation, and polishing are unnecessary, and that peace and authenticity comes from slowing down, stopping, and looking within, which is, you know, I believe also, you know, the voice of truth and wisdom. So I really liked the direction that he took it. And that's part of the fun of doing these shows, is to see how two people react to the same prompt in very different ways. This was a wonderful example of it, I thought. And Laurent, your thoughts?
That was a great comment, Richard. I think Shakespeare had a few things to say about rubs, but I don't remember any of them. I just know he did. Constantly changing for peers in society leaves only crumbs. Well, bravo. The moment that you abandon who you are less than you were. People who remain who they are in the face of criticism, in the face of popular trends, whatever they may be, and listens to that inner drum, the shining beacon, as Matt says, are the people who attract other people because they know who they are, and so many of us are lost. We don't know. As he says again, when you're feeling lost in that direction, and we are all the time, you know, there's a little devil on one shoulder and a little angel on the other. The angel is good to have around, but that devil's always picking at us, you know, doubt, fear, anxiety, depression. So when you're lost in feeling, when you're feeling lost and without direction, remember what you can do instead of wanting change. Unless you're really out of bounds on something, remember who you are. And you can't really do better than that in life. I just thought Matt did a great job of establishing that tone, that wise advice. Well done.
Excellent comment there, Laurent. Okay, Babla, I'm turning it back to you.
All right. I've put a poem by Colap up on the board. Laurent, if you wouldn't mind reading that.
Oh, I love reading Colap's poetry. Some belles jeunes filles. All right. It's called A Tango of Light. Pulse throbs from within. Radiates without, concentric. That energy flows in circles, tips of feet pointed in the direction where that energy leads. Fluid, even though your soul bleeds from a gash in the heart, your body sways to the beat as the frills of the willow sweeps the wet grass beneath. It weeps for losses unrequited. Her body gyrates, the silken robe swirls, in a blue chiffon, an ocean whirl. She dances because the pain of her soul's crack. She dances so the light would filter through the crack. She dances as her bandage unwinds. Its strip ripping turns around. The crust of wound breaks. Blood seeps out. Still she dances through the rain of arrows, the rain of bullets. Still she dances to stop the pain. The rain, to stop the bullets in midair, to numb, to block. She hums and sings, but when she dances, sun rays pierce through the walls of rage, as specks of gold float in limbo. And they too dance, their dance of light sentient, prescient, omnipresent, in this kaleidoscopic tango of bodies. End.
Wow, great read there, Laurent. What a powerful poem. So this was the Rumi prompt, dance when you're broken open. Dance if you've torn the bandage off. Dance in the middle of the fighting. Dance in your blood. Dance and you're perfectly free. And I love where Kolop went with this. The dervishes whirl. I believe she's captured the essence of their mystical dance quite skillfully. I especially liked, and they too dance, their dance of light, sentient, prescient, omniscient, in this kaleidoscopic tango of bodies. And you can feel the ecstasy, you know, the ecstatic mystical state brought about by that kind of primal dance. And if you've ever seen it, it's just like, how the hell do these guys stand up? They're literally twirling around in a circle, and you'd think that they would lose their balance, they'd fall over. You know, as kids, it's our equivalent of getting high, is to twirl around in a circle until we drop, and yet they don't. And a tango of bodies, perfect description of what it was. So, yeah, I really identified with it. Great, great right. And Babbler, your thoughts on it.
I love how expressive this piece is. There's so much movement in this. You really can almost see it. But I love, too, that it seems to talk about the mental health side of it, you know, the mentality of it. You know, to be doing this wild dancing, you know, much like the Rumi quote says, you know, through a gash in your heart, you know, dance even though your soul bleeds, you know, dance when you're weeping, you know, just, it's, I think, you know, very strongly gives the sense of expression. You know, she dances as her bandage unwinds, its strip whipping as she turns around, the crust of wound breaks. Blood sleeps out, still she dances. You know, to me it's almost like don't let the pain break you. You know, just keep that willful kind of spirit, you know, all of the things that the world may cut you down with. You know, you're not down till you're down. It's kind of the subtext of it. But it's just this beautiful imagery on top of that. Like, you can just really see all the motion. I enjoy the really short lines that give you just those snapshots of movement. I think it's very well done. Wonderful teaching for that.
Excellent comment. Yeah, and I really think that that you're right. She captured an aspect of Rumi that is almost a perfect 180 from, I don't know what else to call it other than the cult of positivity that we find nowadays in a lot of this New Age literature, you know, where it's like, oh, we always have to be happy and, you know, put a positive spin on every tragedy that happens to us, as opposed to embracing the multicolored rainbow that life is, including the darkness, and the dance in the middle of it. So I think that was captured really well, and your comment, Babbler, really brought it out too. And Laurence, I'll give you last word.
You know, the comments just made identify something. You spoke about it perfectly, Richard. The cult of positivity, I think you called it. I think we've forgotten how to be sad. We just end up being angry, and it leads us nowhere. But if you approach sadness from a perspective, it can help you to heal. It can help you to grow, and it can certainly help you to become more positive, if nothing else, by contrast. And I thought that this poem was a hell of a dance. It was filled with emotion, movement, wisdom. I was much taken by the collapse right as she brought us with her in this mad gyration, this tangle of bodies that we are. It was a great pleasure to read it.
Absolutely. Great comment. Boy, yeah, we're on fire tonight with the poetry. Okay, Babbler, I'm turning it back to you.
All right, so the next piece I post to the board is called Love, by Kelsey B. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Love, forgive me. I summoned your name before I learned my own. Selfish, I know. Still, I willed you here. Our pact drawn in blood. With one long wail you arrived. An anarchist, an answer, ready for my revolution. Overnight, I birthed an ocean, a mirror for the charging sky. What is it about a cerulean eye that steers the troubled sea? By now you must know, in you I see my saving, grace, my named ship grown from living trees, a perfect hewn, the hull, all the dead leaves disappearing in your wake. I followed you everywhere. Remember? Turn around. Look, arms still flailing. I'm here to give you all. I never knew I had, but first I must float my own beating heart. End quote.
Great read, Babbler. Yeah, you know, I read this before the show, and I got it that it was a deeply spiritual and philosophical poem. But this second read, when you were reading it live on the air, Babbler, it hit me without parodying or mimicry that this really was like a Rumi poem. Just the beauty, the spirituality, the love poetry, philosophical, introspective, and the musicality too. And I think, you know, I don't read Arabic or speak Arabic, or, you know, and to be perfectly honest, maybe it's Persian, I'm not sure, but I've never read Rumi in the original, so I leave it to the translators to give me the musicality, and even in translation, the musicality comes through, and I think that all those elements were captured so well in this poem. It's very, very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts? Are you on mute?
Don't know if I was on mute. But what are you going to do?
That happens.
I was fascinated by the ability of the poet in this case to really develop what the prompt was talking about. Because basically, find out what is in you that prevents this acceptance or love or whatever the emotion is, that there are barriers inside of you that have to be torn down. And when Kelsey says, with one long wail you arrived, an anarchist, an answer, ready for my revolution, I see a personality that is there to help her drop those barriers. He's an anarchist. He's going to blow everything up and perhaps rebuild it in his own image. I love the line, I birthed an ocean, a mirror for the changing sky. It's a perfect, one is a perfect reflection of the other, but upside down. And I can imagine that this anarchist turned her upside down a little bit. And she realizes that even though she has followed him, she can't just be a follower. And she asks him to turn around and look because she's ready to offer him everything that she didn't know she had. But before that happens, he has to learn to drop the final barriers. I must float my own beating heart. Great poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Babbler, your thoughts?
Really enjoyed the duality of this piece. You know, it's a letter to love. You know, you're asking love to forgive you. And to me, you know, this piece is kind of telling a double-sided story
of what sounds to me like having a child very young, like before you know how to love yourself. But then learning to love yourself via learning to love the child. And just kind of the pain of that, the dual pain of not really knowing yourself and now having to carry, you know, to care for this other person that you also don't know. You know, and learning what unconditional love means, and how to apply that to yourself. I really loved it. I thought that there was some very, like, visceral nature imagery in here. You know, like this, the long wail, you arrived, an anarchist, an answer. You know, I birthed an ocean, a mirror for the charging sky. It's just this really great natural imagery in here that's very powerful. You know, and the name Grace, you know, which I took to have, like, again, that dual meaning. You know, the name of the child, but also grace itself, you know, that sense of forgiveness. You know, understanding that things aren't flawless. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done and a very strong write. So.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. And with that, I guess we're ready for our next one.
On the board, Richard, if you want to give this one a read.
Absolutely. Okay. So this is by Eva Ohazi. It's called From This Side of the Distance. When nocturnal breezes get to shore, bringing the message of yet to come previous lives from silver slivers of the crescent moon, the night pieces together your face on shattered water mirror, followed by a moon shadow. I love you from this side of the distance, tied to you, cut off from you, by the same 4,000 miles. Mallards and swans are already sleeping hidden in islands of nodding reeds, while swinging beside the harbor pier, sailboats' bare masts stretch out themselves towards the sky, and the Orion constellation looks down on me as I lift my sight to the starry dome, just the way as you gaze up into starlight somewhere under the oriental firmament, and my glance meets yours there in the depths of dizzying heights. End of poem. And Babbler, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think?
I thought this was really interesting. You know, reading through this, again, we have this really strong natural imagery. And kind of interspersed with this celestial imagery, you know, silver slivers of the crescent moon, the night pieces together your face on a shattered water mirror. You're looking into this water, gazing into a face, and to be cut off by the same 4,000 miles, which is, you know, such an interesting distance. You know, and again, all this imagery, you know, everything kind of held in a moment, the mallards and the swans sleeping and the harbor pier and the sailboats and looking up at the stars, and to see, you know, each other in the stars. I kind of read this as two ways, you know, two people who miss each other dearly and look up into the night sky and appreciate the fact that they are probably seeing the same sky, they're still under the same sky, and have that kind of sense of connection. But I almost, from that first stanza, view it as connecting with pieces of yourself, you know, perhaps from, you know, an idea of reincarnation or, like, shattered soul, kind of a interpretation, but just this sense of connectedness. So I imagine it's probably the first interpretation based on the inspiration for the piece, you know, just that connectedness, if you believe in soulmates or, you know, long distance, you know, which I've done before. but it's very romantic with the way that it ties in celestial bodies and nature. So I thought this was a well-written piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is a true love poem. It is inherently very, very romantic. Now, Eva is from Egypt, so I'm trying to think about the 4,000-mile distance. I guess it doesn't really matter. There's someone 4,000 miles away who loves her dearly and who she loves dearly. And this is a love letter almost to that love and the distance between them. The imagery is really stunning in this. The Orion constellation looks down on me as I lift my sight to the starry dome, just the way as you gaze up into starlight, somewhere under the oriental firmament. It's definitely that side of the word, but it really exemplifies that the quote by Rumi, lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along. It's not a question of searching, but waiting for that meeting, almost as if it's intended. There's a line in here that I thought was so good. It's the third line. Let me read the first three. When the nocturnal breezes get to shore, bringing the message of yet to come, previous lives, and she speaks of the past as the future, not having arrived yet, which I thought was outstanding line. Eva, once again, has given us a fine, fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think you both kind of nailed this one. She's such a talented poet, and the imagery is so rich. And here she's giving us a quintessential love poem, incredibly spiritual, and just drew me in from the very first lines. And I just read it, so I won't repeat them, but I could see, Babler, why you would say reincarnation or disparate that line, yet to come previous lives. And it is so rich that it's open to multiple interpretations. And any way you slice it, it is a poem that explores love as only someone who has experienced deep spiritual love could. And I forget who said it, but someone said, you know, you can't really be a writer until you're 40 years old or something like that, some random age. But the idea was, because then you've experienced enough life to draw upon and to have the voice come through with authenticity in your poetry, in your words, in your storytelling. And that's what comes across here. It's the voice of authenticity regarding the experience of love. So just a brilliant piece. Okay, and with that, we are ready to move on.
The next piece is by Laurent. If you wouldn't mind reading that for yourself, that'd be much appreciated.
All right, I think I can handle that. You know, when I look at the quotes for the contest, I was struck by the fact that one stood out that did not suggest, to me at least, a love story or the possibility of a romantic poem or something along those lines. He spoke about, it'd be elsewhere, this place, this thing, and it kind of triggered something in me, so. You're not going to find any real love in this poem, but we'll see. Called My Soul is from Elsewhere. When the Holocaust sun rises, or traditions blacken miles, and raven feather prophecies fall circling skies, is the mysterious elsewhere of which a surfeit is spoken, ill legends sought by the curious, dark deeds that feed the broken. My soul is from this place, strange home to call by name. I remain a lurker on the periphery, skillful player the shadow game. Grim years of search, of iron bridges and undulating spans, steadfast bloodhound tracking the infinite reflections of man. Yet it eludes me, this egoless viper, any and swift, ageless mocking blade, and neither tiger nor snake may I be, but keen of eye, sighted seer of self, in order to capture, whether by poison or rapture, remains of elsewhere to see. Game board of play is large, a crystal universe entire, casting my hands upon luminous strands of skyfall sponge. Seeking the steps out of the legend elsewhere that brought me forward ages ago, only now to return to be there, soul in tow. If exists it still, the trail be faint, the manner of travel subtle, certitude to lie unmasked must allow for no rebuttal. My soul is from elsewhere. I've grown certain of that, and harbor no doubt, though weary, washed out, I intend to end up there. End poem.
Wow. Amazing work. Dabbler, let's start off with you. What'd you think?
I really liked this piece, Laurent. It beautifully captures that darkness. It's kind of... it's grittier. Like, it almost feels sooty. I don't know how to phrase it. And yet, it is romantic, but it's a different kind. You know, it's not, like, sexually romantic. It's, you know, about the epic that is somebody's life. You know, whether you're talking about, like, an actual hero story or, like, a more mundane life. You know, that's your life, like that's your saga. You came from elsewhere and you shall return to elsewhere. And the story that lies between here and there, like, is the life story. It's the road to perdition. It's the battles. It's, you know, those things, those gritty things that make up life. And I love the different ways that that's phrased, you know, to talk about, you know, steadfast bloodhound tracking the infinite reflections of man, you know, yet it eludes me, this egoless viper, canny and swift. You know, there's such gritty, like gritty and strong and powerful images that get played out here, you know, to be searching for meaning, to be struggling through, and then to know that the end goal is to return. I really like it. It's delightfully circular. It feels like a mini saga. I liked it very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I totally agree, Babbler. I think this is the hero's journey up to us in a relatively short poem. And if you're familiar with Campbell's work, the hero's journey has all these different stages to it. It starts with the call to adventure, and I mean, I won't outline them all, but there's the ordeal and then resolution. And I think that this poem actually has all those elements in there. And so it is almost like a classical poem, you know, in the tradition of Homer's Odyssey. just a very, very strong tribute to Rumi's work. I'm almost at a loss for words, but I will say when I read it, it gave me chills, which is a rare and special thing. So I definitely appreciate your efforts for our show, and you always do bring it, Laurent. And this one was definitely right up there with among the best of them. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, Babbler, where'd you like to go next?
I keep forgetting to unmute myself tonight. I'm having, I just keep talking, and then every time I start talking, I realize that the mute button is still on. So,
that's okay.
I usually catch it up for a few seconds, but there's a few seconds of me going, and nobody heard what I said. Richard, I've put your piece up if you want to go ahead and give that a read.
Okay, so interestingly, I wrote to the same prompt as Laurent. And this one is called Where I'll End Up. In silent wraps of tattered, dirt-marred cloth, midst gelatinous cream spaces between exhale and in, as my cat-postured stretches of neck transition to skull and inner mind, there I'll end. Gold-bridled mermaids dance through lightless tides, high and low, while singing of time-altered eves, of isles where moon, star, and sun nearly kiss. In dreams I've bathed amidst their sea-salted oil and drunk of their sexless tale. Every seashell still roars full with ocean foam, though each weakening beat of my pulsing aorta mocks through inky black of desolate desert night while calling me back from these broken shadow lands, ever calling to home. End of poem. So, Babbler, I'll have you call him out.
All right. I really liked this piece, Richard. It's interesting having it follow Laurent's because they're so different, and yet you can tell that they're from the same prompt. But they took such different tack. This one is fantasy romantic, you know, this idea of dying and thinking about, you know, the kind of spiritual but interesting thing. It feels very, gosh, my brain is just not working, beachy. It feels nautical, but like on a beach shore, you know, because this gelatinous cream spaces as my cat postured stretches of neck transition to skull and inner mind, you know, to give up like the physical world and move into your mind. And it's full of like mermaids and isles of the moon where stars and the sun are nearly kissing and there's sea-salted oils and all these interesting animals. And you still hear the sea and the seashells as everything kind of fades to black. I can almost hear the seashell noise, like, throughout, you know, the waves on the beach. And it puts, like, an interesting soundtrack to the back of this. You know, this idea that you'll fade into your own mind and go through this fantasy that will eventually fade to nothing, that will call you back to home. It is, again, like darkly romantic. You know, it feels like fantasy on what quiet death throes look like. You know, like what is it like to die in your sleep?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done.
Great comment. Well, yeah, that's definitely what I was going for. Absolutely. Great comment.
Laurent, what did you think of Richard's piece?
I enjoyed this piece immensely. When I read about the cat postured stretches and neck transition to skull and inner mind, there it'll end. I kind of thought I knew where you were going, but the rest of it really has to do with an ocean. Let me see, how do I want to phrase this? We all come from the water. That's the birthplace of life on Earth. And somehow I feel that most people view the ocean, the sea, as unconsciously perhaps, as the place where we all came from and the place they might return to, even if they don't voice it. But when you talk about mermaids with sexless tails, that line blew me away, for instance. And you write of singing of time-altered eaves of isles where moon, stars, and sun nearly kiss. There's a particular time of day where, when the moon is still in the sky, the sun has risen, and the stars are very, very faint. They're in the process of going away, and all three are in the sky for us to look at. And it's something that only happens at a particular time. And of course, having the moon, stars, and sun would be a cataclysm of cosmic proportions if you would take it literally. But the fact that you use that to paint an image is really, I think, quite remarkable. You talk about the seashell still roaring full with ocean foam. And basically, you're being called home from broken shadowlands, and you describe it as the inky black of desolate desert night. The desert is far, far from an ocean or the place where you will finally end up, and you can use that as a metaphor for ending up almost anywhere, really. It's the voyage, of course, and I don't really see any romance in this, unless the gold bridal mermaids represent the loves of your life, not altogether sure. But for a brief poem, and it is short, you packed an awful lot into it. And I can see the elsewhere, again, unidentified perhaps, lurking. Great piece.
Thanks so much. Okay, and with that, we are ready for our next one. Where would you like to go now?
I put the piece up by Joe Braz on the board, and I will go ahead and read this one. This is Homespun. I'm those woods that drive-in movie screen, top of Danforth Hill, still look like home. The school bus brats measure up to the kids of schools they fill up. Gravelvue et Telemont Fou feel real to me. What have I done to glean, creeping around under your nose? It's you I don't, halitosis spat on. They forge on abroad, aboard low-sinking ships, oh mon dieu, pour quoi est-ce si étrange? Gravel too as stupide. Really, spank from you? My boat floats displacing more water, your bobs about the surface without depth or mooring. As your harbor swirls with backgammon board precision, you make revisions on slobs of worlds, wild you, don't know squat. You're rooted here. I'm over there, wrapped in sweet sweat. You tout and spout language while I go on rampage dodging damages bundled policy won't cover. Then hover evening cumulus clouds. Why so high the pride inside loud died before you could see the meat of me, the teal tea, really. Don't then try fitting in. Let them think they win the prize. Leave them behind as the chariot arrives its golden stair. Unfurl for you. Let your feet laid bare. Clean underwear. Paramedics don't care. Toss your homespun hope under the bus your lust gropes. Or like mom says, hairy grapes. End poem. I apologize for my butchering French.
No,
Spanish.
Oh yeah, right. The other language stuff. Yeah, I couldn't have done it either. But I think it had this surreal cut up vibe, you know, a la William Burroughs, that would make it a hard read no matter what. And so you did an admirable job with it. And I thought that vibe, that cut up, you know, where the lines are kind of just cut, it was quite fitting for a poem about our soul being from elsewhere. And I loved where he took the prompt, which is really interesting because it was, you know, quite different from where I took it and also quite different from where Laurent took it. So it just shows you how Rumi is so open to interpretation and calls from the depths of our soul and asks us to be unique and to dig deep. And Joe did that for us. Great job. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
I found it very abstract. You called it surreal, but I can't argue with that. It's almost as if this person looks askance at most other people, considering himself who he is, of course, to be a strong person who connects with himself, a person who doesn't compromise who he is. And actually the French phrases speak of, an accusation. Grévin vous êtes tellement fou, you know, you're completely crazy. Oh mon Dieu, pourquoi tu es si étrange, Grévin, tu es stupide. My God, why are you so strange? Ravel, you are stupid. So he's speaking from a place of superiority. And it's interesting that those particular phrases were in French as opposed to being in English, because I think the message there is important. Again, I would love to reread this, although I had to really, really smile at the last lines, toss your homespun hope under the bus, your lust ropes, or like mom says, hairy grapes. Okay, that is very cute. nice job.
Absolutely. And Babbler is reader. I'll give you a final word on the piece.
I thought this was really interesting. It's almost like getting snapshots of how someone thinks, you know, not really in complete sentences, but in like fleeting ideas. You know, and to think that this is the way they see the world, you know, as this sense of superiority, you know, of being better than everyone else. But everyone else is just like these nasty, halitosis-ridden, dirty, gross children smushed together on a school bus, you know. And anytime anyone like has anything to brag or say about themselves, they're just like, really? Like, you think you're worth anything? It's really interesting, and it's their idea of elsewhere is almost like better, like being from somewhere, you know, superior than everyone else, like looking at everyone like they're just a bunch of naked apes, you know. You tout and spout language while I go on rampage, dodging damages bundled policy won't cover, then hover evening cumulus clouds. Why so high the prize? inside Lao died before you could see the meat of the meat, you know. You think, you know, I'm out here avoiding all of the things that you say that could damage me, you know, like I'm going around like just wreaking havoc from up here, and yet you're prideful, but you've seen nothing. You know, you've barely touched on who I am. It's interesting because it's like about, hey, don't judge people while like really judging people. It feels like an incredibly, hypocritical like piece. It's interesting. I enjoy the voice. There's, you know, almost like a humor to it, a very dry humor. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, we are ready for the next one.
So for the next one, I'm putting up a piece that was written by, if you want to give that one a read, Richard, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Okay. So this one is by Fill My Eyes, who is our admin here at Late Night Poets. It's a poem called My Art, and it is inspired by the Rumi quote that says, "In your light, I learn how to love. In your beauty, how to make poems. You dance inside my chest where no one sees you, but sometimes I do. And that sight becomes this art." And the poem is called My Art. In my thoughts of you, I have come to realize it was from your beauty and light that I have learned to love and create, for it is through your examples I have seen the true divine. I've gathered all that I could learn from you and have held it safely within the confines of my chest, not as to hold it captive, but that it could inspire my soul. There I feel your dancing spirit within, and it lightens and enlightens me. No one sees you there, but each time I get a glimpse of your presence, that very glimpse is what becomes this, my art, my poetry. End of poem. And Laurent, if we could start comments off with you, what'd you think?
Well, Gene certainly captured the Rumi quote perfectly. In my thoughts of you, I've come to realize it was from your beauty and light that I have learned to love and create. And she certainly offers some beautiful lines that foster that. I've gathered all I could learn from you and have it safely within the confines of my chest, not as to hold it captive, but that it could inspire my soul. He speaks of his spirit, which both lightens and enlightens me, and I thought that was very powerful. To see someone and glimpse that love is also poetry, and it's a poetry that is transferred like love is from one person to another. Certainly reflects the prompt, I thought, perfectly. She's done herself proud with this work. It's soft, it's eloquent, it's glowing. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comments. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I thought this was really beautiful. This is the kind of poetry that I'm terrible at writing. you know, it feels true. It feels authentic, and it's romantic, and it's sweet, but not, like, disgustingly saccharine, you know. And that's where I kind of struggle with romantic poetry, both in myself writing it and sometimes reading it, you know. Sometimes I'm just like, ugh. that's just me. But this is beautifully done. This is authentically romantic, you know, and it can apply to so many different things. You know, for me, I think of, you know, like my father who's passed away. But you could think of it in so many different ways. You know, it could be anybody in somebody's life. It could be somebody that's still around or somebody who's passed away, or it could be just the idea of something divine. It feels personal, but also nebulous enough for the reader to apply it to their own life. I also thought it was really interesting because it appears to almost be a shape poem. It almost looks like a paintbrush to me, touching the paper. So I really liked it. I thought it was well done. Nice job, Chill My Eyes.
How cool. I hadn't seen that until just now. I can see it. Yeah, I too really love this piece. It's relatively short, but my gosh, you can tell this is Fill My Eyes drawing deep within to tell us something intimate and personal and show us how it influences her poems. And yet, I felt it. I felt it highly relatable. And I felt that she touched a vein and shone a mirror on what inspires me to write my poetry. So it was quite beautiful and a great ad for our evening of Rumi. Great job. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
All right. I put a piece up on the board by S. Sharp. Laurent, would you give that a read for us?
With pleasure. Down darkened stairs. Childhood begets manhood. Struck out upon city ways. Lynched by street lights, dulled by inexperience, youth, where crows feed upon leftovers, where fools nest in foolish pride. Down darkened stairs, concrete feet click upon wooden nerves, pinched in the hollow of second guessing. Dissension, creaking sounds of the cracked conscience of night. Turned to stone, fancy a future, history builds walls, fears, bruised eyes, divided in the wafer-thin walk of lies. Hate peels from these tattoos, skin thinned by tough times. Faded, worn ideals flake, long stares blink upon the bankruptcy of pride. Scarred, swept under, dissipating under the wispy trails of mist and moonlight. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And this one was to the prompt yesterday. I was so clever. Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I'm wise, so I want to change myself. And that was freaking, yeah, great prompt, right? Babbler, if we could start with you.
This is interestingly dark, especially considering the prompt. You know, the prompt seems to hint at, you know, becoming wise and realizing that the change you want to see comes from within. And yet this piece has such like a dark, like almost graveyard-like feel to it, you know. It's childhood begets manhood, lit by streetlights, you know, crows feeding on leftovers, where fools nest in foolish pride. Like, it's about how that wide-eyed youth was kind of picked apart. It's not so much about, like, changing for the better. It's about how that innocence is lost. To go down darkened stairs, to start second guessing yourself, to be turned to stone, to see walls, fears, bruised eyes divided in the wafer thin walk of lies, to be disenchanted, to experience the ugliness of life, and the way that kind of leads to wisdom in a way. There are multiple ways to get there, and there are multiple things to learn about, and I'm not going to claim to be all wise or all knowing, because doing so is the epitome of not being. But this is almost, seeing the darkness that is in reality that leads to a certain type of wisdom, paint peeling from tattoos, and ideals flaking away, and realizing that the world isn't going to change is really how it feels. So it almost feels hopeless in a way. So it's a very dark piece. Interesting, right? I did enjoy it very much. It took a tack I hadn't expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great comment, and I agree. I think that this is showing wisdom with kind of like the existential bent that, stripping away naivete that wants to change the world and seeing the wisdom in kind of a, in a no-holds-barred existential vision of what life is, which, I would argue that existentialists were very dark, and this captures that kind of wisdom very well. So, and definitely, these guys were no dopes. I mean, I would actually even argue that the father of existentialism predated the movement. That if you look to Dostoevsky, the underground, Notes from Underground, that's almost like the first existential piece. I think that's where Scott was going with this, and it was quite unusual, which is why I wanted to take the extra minute to read the prompt. But I liked it. I liked what he did, that he stayed true to his vision of what wisdom is. So very well done. And Laurent is reader. I'll give you the final word.
Laurent is kind of stunned that everything that he had to say was just spoken so eloquently by both yourself and Baffler. I scarcely know what to add to that. There are people who consider life a real joy, and it is, but life is also pain, and youth learns from pain. At least it should. It stubs its toe all the time. It's a difficult thing. It says, turn to stone, fancy a future. History builds walls, fears, bruised eyes, divided in the wafer-thin walk of lies. If you're gullible, if you're naive, and you believe a lot of stuff that you hear by people who are there to manipulate you, you couldn't get a stick. It hurts, let's put it that way. And if you don't learn from it, and it's those things, and that as you grow older, you lose, as the poet says, thin by tough times, faded, worn ideals flake. The bankruptcy of pride, well, we all know what happens and where pride is and where it goes. I thought it was a deep light and really nailed the prompts.
Great comment. Okay, Babbler, with that, I am turning it back to you.
All right. I am going to put mine up here since it's my turn to read, and then I'll jump back in the line. I wrote one for this. I didn't submit it to the contest, but I wrote one. So this is the one that I wrote. Painful Summers.
sharpened blades aimed to prune, malformed appendages tainted with rot, just north of the hand that grips the handle, 45 degrees and the misshapen fingers fall, blooms of red painting me purple, dinner plate dahlias during a late short summer that sprinted, laughing, twirling in crimson scarves, warping into a deep walnut cackle, smacking of copper, and crusting over peach-flecked memories of the before, contemplating the knife, doubting the depth of the cut, racing towards early spring when I plant dahlia seeds in the soil of my soul. End poem.
Wow, great poem, great read. And Laurent, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think?
All right, it's an impressive piece. Sharpened blades aimed to prune malformed appendages painted with rot. You know, you wonder what the sharpened blade is. And I tend to think that those are the things we run into in life, just like everything else. And you use the dahlias as a metaphor for that. And you speak of a late, short summer that sprinted, you know, time really racing at that point. Your use of color and imagery in that portion of the poem, whirling in crimson scarves, wrapping into a deep walnut cackle, smacking of copper and crusting over peach flesh memories. I had to chuckle there at that, because I would love to be able to write exactly like that. Contemplating the knife, doubting the depths of the cut. Have you pruned yourself to the degree that you want to become what you wish to be? Planting dahlia seeds in the soil of my soul. One assumes to grow beautiful, like yourself, just being exactly what you wish to be. I probably didn't get my interpretation very close to what you intended, but there it is.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I too really love this piece. And normally I read them before the show, so that I know what I'm dealing with. And Laurent actually taught me that when I first came on board at Late Night Poets. But I will say that it hit me on a very deep emotional level, but short, painful summers. And early spring when I plant dahlia seeds in the soil of my soul. It's almost, for me, it's almost capturing sadness of how life, it's like that Woody Allen joke, you know, where they say, he says, such terrible food here, yes, in such small portions. And that, you know, the late short summer, just it's so sad that there's lots of pain in there, and yet it's so short, and ain't that life, you know, that it's all over too soon, despite the pain. And I think he captured all of that in this poem. That and you know, and yet it's wonderful and beautiful despite its brevity. So anyway, that's my thoughts, an initial read on it. And I have to say also that the extended metaphor, the use of seasons, the imagery, were all great at drawing me as the reader in. So wonderful job there.
Thanks. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to blindside you. I came home today and then I realized it was still sitting in my grass. never did.
That's okay.
And it's kind of an amalgamation of the prompts. I didn't know which prompt to say that I wrote to because I pulled from a few, the one about dancing when you're broken is in there too. And then one's about change as well. And the wound is the place where the light enters you, kind of meant to be about like the cycles of growth and pain interspersed with those moments of joy that can sometimes seem so fleeting, but are kind of the point of it all. So,
Well, and nice to know that I wasn't too far off base. Okay. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
Yeah. Let me get that pulled up. Yeah, didn't mean to blindside you. Like I said, I came home and I was like, and I never actually hit submit on that.
That's okay.
So it's helpful if I actually post it. Okay, and I am posting one by Jim Bellamy. If you want to go ahead and give that one a read, Richard.
Okay. All right. So this is by Jim Bellamy, and it's written to prompt one. Prompt one is the wound is the place where the light enters you. And it is called Eaton Spire I Saw from the Sea by Jim Bellamy. The Eaton Spire I saw from the sea swallows inks and papers. Oh, daddy's halo died and pepper seasoned me with lepers. And a buddy boy has to use pepper to anoint his fast fever. Sweaters are washed till done. Leopard's bum. The baby on a throne has to come. Deeply down a mum's stroke thighs. Once aside designs, I drew a pig. Oh, underneath grime, I painted kids. And my searing face fell away from space. And I gave my girl endless lies. The Eaton spires I saw from the sea swallows inks and lepers. And la la, my mind has no knees. And la la, my spine has no keys. And la la, my shadow casts leaves deeply down when sense heaves. Ashes under flashes hasten to owl light. Cat clashes under rashes, ram dumb powder when shaken nights. Lambast thunder with foresight, and I saw a spire from a tree, and I sent embers to a swallowed sea, and la la, ashes under flashes sent me underneath rivers of lime, the Eden pyres I dance for entertain the canine mind. Oh, ashes under flashes, listen for fox rain, and adders thunder snake dust. And arrowers tumble under old musk. Ashes under flashes hasten to owl light. Ah, crashes under blue hospitals. Drag a senile drip into shadowers of peeing casts that drink from lost god. And ires of fevers flay catty killers with blorted sky sods. The Eaton pyres I dance upon enter, a dittery dog head inside sphincters, and maddeners sing for love, and wagoners swing for love, and blenchers in rings dance for Lord, Lady, God. A lazy lemur leads a leaper to a star sign. Oh, a crazy fever hits to a river, and I saw a spire's mind grinding to cochineal to dust. La la, my head appears lost. La la, my bed has no lust. I saw a siren on a cliff, crusading for lemon lepers and old wine. The eastern teas I must gather has to find an island in the west. And my naked skin falls from death, and my fingers sunder sex. And ah, as weeblers reap melon, then sandy lips may well flower. A lazy lemur leads a leper to a car sign. Ah, signal pepper seasons salt with rind. And a yellow lady catches times, will surely scatter sweets across devilers arena loss, and magic latchkeys unlock loss, and tragic families bolt rocked cross. Oh, magical funnel weave washes men bald, oh, easy tunnel weed washes cat halls, and a bawd in summer sharpens owls with winter, and a giddy geld bed sleeps under drawl. Once under a dead mind, I entered under a daddy divan. And mummy wine jazzed to my lover, and my salt woman danced all year. Magical funnel weave washes men dry. O peasy tunnel seed sows salted slides. And a bed at night kisses for blind light. And a vernal moon comes too soon, and weeblers smash a cunt with tunes. Once upon a dead mind, I entered rooms, only to find all bedrooms dead. La la, photo fatalities, silence, dark bread, and a canny caverner carries slushy skin to eaters of bled, fierce fanny lead, magical. Majestical felines flash for a tribal sweep, and emptiness falls from ferine dreams, and vixens fall from sleep, and foxy fast oils hide screams in blue meat and growl radios. End of poem. Okay, Laurent, let's start with you. What do you think?
Why, thank you, Richard. This poem, to me at least, smacks of stream of consciousness, very strongly, as a matter of fact. There is a controlled chaos, a delivery of lines with too many images to relate to all at once. It really is an epic tsunami of imagery and emotion. It calls to mind Dylan Thomas if he took LSD. Of course, he had nothing to drink. Maybe that was a good substitute. It almost seemed to me as if it was little Bob Dylan thrown in here. Not too much, but here and there, I could almost hear his voice. And when you do stream of consciousness, if you do it with a particular focus on something and then just let it happen, oftentimes you never know what you're going to write. It comes out of you. And then you read it and you go, my God, that makes some kind of sense. It really does. So if done correctly, it's a fascinating way of writing poems. And to analyze this piece intelligently, I would need several rereadings in at least an hour. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Great comment, Laurent. And what do you think, Babbler?
I thought this was really fascinating. It is very stream of conscience, and yet it's also it's playful. I picture almost like a fool, you know, like a medieval court fool, you know, where it sounds like nonsense and it rhymes and it has this interesting cadence to it. You know, I almost picture, you know, kind of wild raucous dancing happening. And yet I feel like there are definite undertones. You know, the idea of everyone kind of laughing and singing and dancing to this idea of lepers and burning lepers and, you know, a baby coming on his mom. You know, like these weird, dark, bizarre
scenarios, yet it paints like kind of this interesting picture. You know, it's dark and it's body, and it constantly talks about night. You know, and when the prompt was about, you know, light showing through, I think, you know, it's kind of talking about maybe hinting at, like, what happens when there isn't light. You know, what happens under the guise of darkness, what happens, you know, not in front of people. It feels a bit, like, addled, but intentionally so. I thought it was a really fascinating piece, and it is so long. And there's so many different places to check it out, you know, to really kind of delve in, you know. But keeping the concept of the idea that the wound is the place where the light enters you in mind, you know, it highlights to me the difference in themes that are in here of burning and sex and, you know, the use of light and night, I think probably holds, you know, some weight in this. You know, it is interesting and complex. I think I'd have to read it many times, but that's the first thing I get from it. It is almost like a bodish, you know, medieval style court tale, you know, or Renaissance. It's very fascinating. I enjoyed it. I loved the rhymes, the word uses, the kind of twisted imagery. It was fascinating, right?
Comment. Yeah, I too really love this piece. Just to kind of put a little bit of context to this, I wrote Stream of Consciousness extensively in the early 90s, and I used to just do first thought, best thought into a tape recorder, and I wrote two books of poetry based upon that. And my experience was that whatever you've got, it just comes out, and your natural kind of inner art just it just kind of vomits onto the page, so to speak. And you can see the influences because you're not holding back, and so it's just whatever comes out. And so it's really a very brave, courageous kind of search my soul, here's what it is. And for Jim, I think what you end up with is this kind of musicality and spirituality. And you can hear Dylan Thomas throughout. I can definitely hear Rumi. The other thing that it brought to mind for me was Lewis Carroll, where you have that kind of rhymy borderline on the nonsensical. Very trippy stuff, very surreal. You know, you can see the psychedelics at play. And it's just really beautiful work. I'm a big fan of Jim's work in general. So this long poem that he offered us, I thought was a nice add for our evening of Rumi. Very well done. Okay, where would you like to go now, Babbler?
I have posted a poem up by Eric Svensson. Laurent, if you would give us a read, that'd be great.
Certainly. Don't have a chance to read Eric that often. He often provides us with a SoundCloud. It's a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
This is called Lux Eterna. Sainted light legions always on the march. Centurions sure like stranded white serviettes. Fastidiously folded to become perfect pyramids. place on black dinner plates, or graceful swans, depending on the host. You know what? I need my glasses. I'm sorry. I'm going to start over again, if that's permissible. But I made the mistake.
Sure, take your time.
Of putting them. There we go. Sainted light legions always on the march. Centurion, sure like starched white serviettes, fastidiously folded to become perfect pyramids placed on black dinner plates, or graceful swans standing on the host. Quirky quicksand quandary, who is the host? To many sainted light legions sent, and the coast is toast. The little sainted light legions dispatch, and the ice maiden freezes hell over. Quartermaster host dispensed light legions from the dawn of time. One light year is about 6 trillion miles, says NASA. Sainted light legion centurions travel this distance in one Earth year. Nanosecond blips of human lives on Earth bleep snail blood trails. My own oft leads to rudimentary rumination flood. Sainted light legions shed light on Rumi. Knocked 3 times and a door opened. Asked twice, got given a green card to the rumination. And this tiny talk poem many lunar calendars ago. Mark the light. It flows so bright, bleeds from the wounded man's side, crucified on the cross of space and time. He hangs forsaken and forlorn, a crown of thorns his bloody head adorned. Mark the light, invisible to the human eye. It swirls, whirls to surround him. Grief and despair huddles. Foot of the cross, this bruised, broken body needs repair. Above, arched lips set clueless captors free. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Mark the light, no longer impaled on the cross of earthly space and time. Never has been, never will be. Wounded. We know this. Lux Aeterna, eternal light. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And that was to the prompt, what you seek is seeking you. This was a wonderful riffing off of that prompt. And it was brimming with Eric's trademark spiritual mystical musings. I love the repetition of that phrase, where is it? It's the open that gets repeated almost as a refrain throughout the poem, which is sainted light legions always on the march. And then mark the light also is like a counter refrain throughout the poem, the second half of the poem. So the lyricism, the musicality, along with that trademark spiritual mystical musings were quite compelling, I thought. I appreciated the poem within the poem, hearkening to earlier, simpler musings, perhaps, but his spiritual song remains the same. And yeah, I'm so glad that he wrote to Rumi, because I do feel like it's right in his wheelhouse. Very well done. And Babbler, your thoughts?
I think that was really interesting. You know, the different takes on a light legion, you know, I love the exploration of the different meanings and interpretations and warpings of words that happen in here. You know, light
as in spiritual light, light as in actual light, light as in something that doesn't weigh much, you know, legions as, you know, meeting a lot of something, legions as a military unit, legion, you know, like so many different explorations, you know, to open this up with light being a dinner napkin, I thought was really fascinating, you know, depending on the host, and then to explore what it means, you know, the host of a dinner party or like a religious version of the host or so many different plays on words and stretchings. I really enjoyed so much in here, you know. Even Rumi included in that, you know, shed light on Rumi, and then it goes into got given a green card to the rumination, to take Rumi and then add rumination, like the thinking, but then also it's a green card, so it's like the Rumi nation. You know, there's wonderful wordplay in here, wonderful explorations of ideas and meanings and twistings that I think are really excellent. And I feel like this takes the spirituality of Rumi's poems and does it in a wonderful way. And I think the prompt that was used, you know, what you seek is seeking you, you know, like light is seeking you out, is great. And I also think it equally fits the prompt about light entering through wounds as well. I thought this was a very fascinating piece. I enjoyed it immensely.
Great comment. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word. Are you on mute? Okay, actually, Laurent has dropped.
Oh, no.
So that's okay. He stayed with us for 1¾ hours, so.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so we, absolutely, yeah, oh, makes all the difference. So we probably have time for another one. You're looking at the board and seeing what you got.
Yep, so I posted a piece called Pyramids by Dark Knight of Soul. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read. Pyramids. Some things are written in history. Unchangeable Egyptian pyramids. Some things are facts. Canadian geese head south with frost. Life is not fair. Also written. Also a fact. One that is instilled. In every girl whose sister is prettier. On every cheater going free one more time, and every sick person who falls asking, why me? And every sick person who survives asking the same. Love is not written. It's malleable, changeable as an April day in Boston. This fact I've experienced firsthand. You say your love is the pyramids. Only time ends it. Sure as Canadian geese in our December garden. Life is not fair and love even less so. My love in Plato, lazy and capricious and dubious of pyramids. Sometimes, in an honest moment, you see Plato pretending to be a pyramid, and that wrecks me. Some things are unchangeable. Like the way you make everyone feel cared for by being you. That over-the-top cartoon character of a person that puts everyone else first. I know what I am. But in those moments, you make me want to believe I can be a pyramid too. End of poem.
Wow. Great read. Boy, and I read this one before, and it hit me the first time, but when you read it live right now on the air, it hit me even more so. It's such a almost paradox that there's the pain of love and the naivete of what a lover proclaims, and yet it's so compelling, the sincerity, the belief of the person who's lost in romantic love. And I thought it was wonderful philosophical musings on nature as well as human nature. That close was especially haunting and yet simultaneously hopeful. I know what I am, but in those moments, you make me want to believe I can be a pyramid too. And yeah, just a beautiful piece. I'm really interested to hear your take on this, Babbler, as I thought it was kind of a paradoxical poem.
I enjoyed this very much, especially with the prompt that it was based on. You know, yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I am changing myself. And to me, it speaks of that wisdom being written in pain, you know, losing that naivety, you know, believing once that, you know, love, when someone told you they loved you, it was forever. And when relationships could be this romantic fairy tale, but knowing that that's not the case, you know, some things are forever, you know, the pyramids are written in history and geese fly south. That's a fact. Love is none of those things. You know, there, it can be fleeting. It can be false. It can be hurtful, you know, to instilled in every girl whose sister is prettier, on every cheater going free one more time, and every sick person that asks why me, and every sick person who survives asking the same. You know, it's not fair. Love is not fair. Life is not fair. And so wiser, jaded view on love that this person holds, knowing that it can be as unpredictable as an April day in Boston, but then to have also this conflicting life experience where they're in love with this person who says that they love them, and it sounds so much like they mean it. You know, that they say that their love is the pyramids, it is the Canadian geese, and they're having this argument with themselves in their own mind with their experience and what they want to believe. And this new person who's maintaining, you know, they say that they love you and they show that they love you and they're consistent, and it starts to, you start to like reevaluate your beliefs, is what I get from it, you know. Sometimes in an ominous moment, you see Plato pretending to be a pyramid, and that wrecks me, you know, to it looks like a pyramid, but it's not. And yet the way this person loves the narrator makes them want to be a pyramid, makes them want, you know, them to be written in history, makes it want this love to be solid, to be real. And they're edging on that belief based on this open consistency of this other person. You know, to change your worldview based on someone else. You know, it does speak of hope, and it's like a jaded hope, you know, wanting to love despite life's experiences teaching you not to trust things and still trying to trust. So I think it's a beautiful story, and it's really interestingly written. I really like this write.
Absolutely, yeah. Great comment. Yeah, I kind of feel like between the two of us, we've shown a little light onto the truth held within this poem. Okay, so here's our situation. We've got around 4.5 minutes. If you have a brevity left, maybe that would work.
Let me take a quick peek and see what I have. Otherwise, we'll do kind of a long wrap up if I don't see anything.
Yeah. That's fine, too.
So I don't want to get into anything too long. Well, this one's kind of short. I will post a poem called Love Not Looked For by Vicki Moore onto the board if you want to go ahead and give that a read.
Okay. Oh, yeah, this is perfect length. Yep. This is Vicki Moore, Loved For. I quit looking for love long ago. Although I had dated, it was never true love. I saw you standing on the corner, waiting for the same bus as me. I kept looking at you, feeling we had met before. We sat together on the bus. I asked you where we had met. You said we hadn't. We chatted easily. When the bus stopped, you got off and held my hand. Looking into your eyes, I felt something strange. I felt my blood flowing into yours, my breaths matching yours. You said my soul had flown into your soul. We were married 3 days later. My soul, my blood, my heart, and my breath entwine with yours even after 20 years. End of poem. And what do you think of this one, Babbler?
This is a great poem. It's this interesting whirlwind romance. You know, it speaks to me of like soulmates or twin flames. This romantic idea that you could just know upon meeting someone, to feel like you've known them forever and to just meet and to just know. I'm not sure I could give myself up to that kind of whim. I think I'm much too dubious of a person, but I envy those who can. It's a beautiful whirlwind romance story. What did you think?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's the exact opposite of the story of myself and my wife. We were friends first for a long time, and then we ended up just, you know, I put my hands on her shoulder once at this graveyard, this really old graveyard, having graves like from the 1800s, which is old for the U.S., and we both kind of knew. But that was after a year of just being friends. So the idea of marrying after 3 days, it's kind of like spooky to me, but miraculously, it's obviously worked. And I thought as a result, it was an enchanting love poem that shows spirituality and the magic embedded in so-called ordinary life. And I love those closing lines, my soul, my blood, my heart, my breath entwine with yours even after 20 years. Just a great poem, great way to end the show. And with that, we will end. So first things first, I want to thank Laurent for calling in. I want to thank you, Babbler, as co-host. Shout out to Fill My Eyes for doing the admin work behind the scenes. And lastly, I'd like to thank the poets that write into this show every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. So keep it going, and we will see you 2 weeks from now when we will do our next show. Hang in there. In one half an hour, we've got Pam Ray's show. So that is going to be starting at 12:30 a.m. Eastern Time, half an hour from now. And tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern, Friday, is open mic with Fill My Eyes, so please join us for that. And with that, I'm going to close it out and end the show. Thanks again. Bye now.